I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Line Special Edition. We are celebrating 25 years in business and just entering our 12th year of doing open line programs. We have a few exciting changes. First, we have our new 2020 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Over 25 years of doing this, we have covered almost every topic you can possibly imagine. Our third book, Cracking the High Performance Team Code, is now available, and also offering skills testing and 360s, which have been a huge hit with our clients, and remote lunchtime workshops is another one, such as on stress management and time management, leadership and mentoring workshops. Our topic today is HR challenges in the face of a pandemic. My name is Dana Barocca. I am the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into this important topic. So those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including skills testing, 360s, interpersonal coaching, team building, stress and time management workshops, and much, much more. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. We do have an extremely large crowd today, so if we don't get to everybody, you can always direct your questions later on to our guest. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. I want to introduce a very special friend of mine, close friend, business colleague. Vantaggio HR takes care of all of our HR activities. Thank goodness for Lorraine and her wonderful team. We're in the state of California, and God bless the state of California, how they support small businesses. Lorraine Bifuco is the president of Vantaggio HR. Today, Vantaggio services clients across the country from their offices in California, Hawaii, and New York. Her career experience helps employers realize their HR goals and adapt to the shifting HR landscape, which we can definitely see today. Lorraine's perspective on the impact culture has on business makes her a sought-after industry speaker, such as with SHRM, as a speaker across the country of PIRA, and many, many other associations. She conducts frequent seminars on HR topics with an emphasis on employment law compliance and many other topics. Some of those we'll be covering today. The California Small Business Association has appointed her several years running as chair of the Labor Issues Legislative Advisory Committee and has served several terms on their board of directors. Lorraine was nominated by Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year Award, and her company was honored by being named Small Business of the Year by the California Senate Minority Leader, Senator Dick Ackerman. Vantaggio has also received the prestigious award of being named one of the top 25 women-owned businesses in the United States by Working Mother magazine. She is also a founding member of one of the Orange County chapters of YPO, Women's President's Organization. Lorraine received a bachelor's degree from Wellesley College and conducted graduate-level studies in linguistics at the Sorbonne in Paris. She resides in San Juan Capistrano, where she balances the rigorous demands of growing Vantaggio HR with the art of managing a successful marriage and raising two children. And yet, in her spare time, Lorraine pursues two other longtime passions, gourmet cooking and traveling. And you are welcome to come over to our house anytime, Lorraine.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that very kind introduction, Dana. And I have plenty of time on my hands now for the gourmet cooking because there's no traveling going on right now. And my speaking across the country, everything I was supposed to speak at in the next 3 months has been canceled. So I've got plenty of opportunity.
Great. Well, we're so glad you're spending with us today. And our next topic, by the way, in the middle of next month will be the invisible edge. So, Lorraine, You're on now, but also we are not doing slides today. So you'll see one slide on the screen, HR challenges in the face of a pandemic, and you'll see Lorraine's contact information there. But we are not doing slides. We are only doing audio, and everyone will have a copy of the audio later on. In a couple days, we'll send that out. And please feel free to share that with colleagues, friends, association members, et cetera. So, Lorraine, you are on. It's
Take it
all
away.
Yours.
Thank you. Hey, Dana, I do not have a login other than I'm called in on the audio.
Oh, you're okay.
So I am not going to be I'm not going to be seeing questions, though. So
yeah,
if you wouldn't mind that if questions come in, you'll take care of it for me.
I'll
okay, fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, everybody. And hopefully some of you were here for a little bit of the chit-chat to talk about some of the positive things in light of what we're dealing with this horrible pandemic. But today's focus is going to be on some of the HR challenges that we're all facing. I promise the cough is not contagious over the phone, and it is allergy related. I have not been exposed, and I'm actually absolutely fine. So what I wanted to start out by saying is that there's some things that are rapidly changing right now, and the list of subjects that we wanted to touch upon that you probably are seeing on your screen right now were the ones we came up with maybe 5 days ago. And I'm going to do a little bit of a shift today because I think that there are a couple of issues that are turning around to be a little bit more urgent areas of question for companies. So I want to start there, and then we'll move into some of the other topics that we talked about. We in Southern California here received an order yesterday that looked like it was a lockdown, shutdown order. Turns out there was a lot of confusion about it. It's not quite what we thought it was. We do have other areas in the country, though, that are receiving orders that people need to stay home and businesses need to cease operating. And even with if your own business hasn't been instructed to shut down, you may well be a business that services companies that are shutting down, say like the restaurant industry or places that, you know, movie theaters, venues that do have public gatherings that are being restricted. And we're really getting an absolute avalanche of phone calls from the HR people and owners of our clients saying, what do I do? What are my alternatives? Do I have to lay my staff off? And so before I talk about what's pending out there, that may be some new federal legislation that we see as early as today, I just wanted to take a moment to remind people about the mechanisms that we all currently have in place. Throughout this country, every state obviously has unemployment benefits. So should you need to lay somebody off, unemployment benefits are going to be available. The president has injected, I believe it was 2 days ago, $1 billion extra dollars into our unemployment program. So unemployment is definitely an option that's out there. I can't speak for every 50 states, but most states have a form of a policy called partial unemployment. And if you want more information specific to your state and can't find it on your own, please reach out to the folks at Lighthouse and I can help get that to you. But partial unemployment is something to consider because it's a bit of a different nature than just regular unemployment. As you're all probably aware, in order to be eligible for unemployment, the worker who has been laid off is supposed to be actively looking for work. In these very, very uncertain times, you may have an immediate need to not have an employee come to work, but you're really hoping that this is going to pass and it's going to be business as usual sometime soon. So this concept of partial unemployment, which has been around for a long time, is that you contact your local employment division, you let them know you want to send this program up. I've had clients that have done it within the past 2 days, and the EDD in California here amazingly was getting back to companies within a couple of hours. And what this program does, you fill out a form, you send it in, it allows your employees to collect unemployment without their needing to be looking for another job. And so you pretty much tell them that it's your intention to want to bring them back to work when you can. They can be collecting unemployment benefits, and then they have the reassurance and you have the reassurance that you folks will be able to, you know, reconnect and they will be reemployed at some time, hopefully here shortly. So one program that I wanted to mention. There's a similar program available in many states that, and again, these the names of these are going to vary from state to state, and I'm using the terminology that they're called here in California. But there is another program called a WorkShare program, and that's if you want to do a partial shutdown or a partial layoff. So I don't want to get too specific of the exact details of how it works in California because it will be different from state to state. But if you were going to have to either cut hours or pay on a certain percentage of your workforce, depending upon the requirements of your state's program, you can petition for what they call a WorkShare program where the unemployment division will help make up the differential. Let's say you took everyone down to a 3-day work week and they're going to be missing 2/5 of their wages. Unemployment could help make up that differential of the wages that the people are going to be out. So I had a few phone calls with clients this week at 8 o'clock at night at home where they were in a mad panic feeling that they had to completely lay people off, and learning that these programs were available helped reassure them that they could put maybe some intermediate mitigating measures in place. One of the advantages that I will mention about that WorkShare program, if that is a viable financial option for your company, and if you can do this, the people are technically not terminated at all. They are just on a reduced pay, reduced schedule. That does permit you to still keep, for example, say their medical health insurance benefits in place and not have to terminate them and put them on COBRA. So two programs that are out there that I really want to, you know, be sharing with everybody because they're not well known about and they tend to be underutilized, and this is the time that we really need them. Any questions on those two programs?
No.
Anybody has used them?
Put them into the chat box if you have any questions.
Yeah, okay.
And we can always come back to them.
All right. So, okay, so the next really big thing that is on the horizon, when I say the horizon, it might be today, is that we are looking at some federal emergency legislation getting passed. It's called the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. It has a lot of different provisions in it. It deals with health insurance. It deals with payments of testing for coronavirus, and I have not read those sections of it. The bill is very, very long. I am not an expert on those other kinds of areas. I am simply going to limit my conversation with you today to the two sections of that pending law that impact directly employment-related matters. Now, I want to share that we've had people get very, very agitated about these since the weekend, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. The current status is that our House of Representatives did pass a version of this bill on Saturday. It created a lot of ruckus. On Monday morning, before they were getting ready to pass it along to the Senate, there was a recognition that it needed some what they called technical corrections. By Monday afternoon, the 67 pages, and I'm not exaggerating, of technical corrections had been authored, and the bill was re-voted on in a very dramatically different form than it had been passed on Saturday, and it was sent to the Senate probably early Tuesday morning. The Senate is likely to make some changes to this. So again, I don't want to get people running off of this call and starting to implement what I'm going to tell you about. I'm going to share with you what it looks like right now, and our anticipation is that we will see something somewhat like this get passed by the Senate, possibly even today, and the expectation is that the president is going to sign it. This law would go into effect within 15 days of signature. Okay. So two important sections for those of you that are employers, and this bill particularly impacts small employers. Before you get too worried about it, let me explain the reasoning. It provides some extension of family medical leave and some additional emergency paid sick days. And this is federal, so all companies across the United States. It applies to employers with fewer than 500 employees. And there have been a lot of people that have been very, very upset by that, saying, well, how come they're beating up on the small companies and not the large companies? this bill comes with a mechanism for the employers who have to comply with it to get the costs reimbursed to them through a credit of your Medicare and Social Security taxes. So the idea was to help motivate the smaller companies to be able to be generous with time off with their employees, but to have the federal government basically fund it. The supposition is that if you are a larger company with over 500 employees, you have the financial wherewithal to do this, and you may well already be doing it with very rich time off and paid time off benefits. Okay, questions before I move on, because this is complicated and very, very new stuff. I want to make sure I don't lose anybody in the weeds here. We're good. So the first section of this bill is Division C, and this is the amendment to the Federal Family Medical Leave Act. It would make a brand new type of leave available related to needing to take time off related to a public health emergency. Normally, under FMLA, for those of you who may be familiar with that leave, an employee needs to have worked at a company for 1,250 hours within and 12 months of service in order to be eligible for an FMLA type of leave. This new special type of FMLA leave, the employee only will have need to have worked for you for 30 days. Okay. Again, as a reminder, all employers with fewer than 500 employees. Now, there is a special exemption for employers with fewer than 50 employees if they are able to show that this would jeopardize the viability of the business. And additionally, there's an exemption if you are an employer of an employee who is a healthcare provider or an emergency responder. Okay. So the reason for being able to take this new type of FMLA leave would be that if the employee is unable to work or telework, as they put it, due to having to take care of a son or daughter under 18 years of age whose school or childcare is closed, you would be able to take 12 weeks of leave. The first 10, you are allowed to tell the employee it's unpaid. And the employee could elect to use any vacation or sick that they have. The employer could not require that. And then the subsequent, basically 12 weeks of leave, the employer would have to pay the employee two-thirds of the employee's regular wages, with some caveats in there that I won't get into because, frankly, the Senate may show us something a little bit different than what the House passed. So it basically puts somebody in a position to take 12 weeks of leave, a good portion of it at two-thirds of their pay, but the employer does petition and get credit on their Social Security and Medicare taxes to get paid back for the cost of providing that paid leave to the employees. Okay. That too, knowing that that's coming, could well be something that would make an employer sit tight today before making a layoff decision, right? So I think it's important information for us to know that this is really imminent. I expect the Senate to take some action on it today. That's my expectation. And I am, honestly, as we've been talking, it could have happened. I've been really checking this stuff by the hour. So, you know, keep tuned. And as soon as I know, and we're going to publish a summary for this and shoot it out, I'll make sure that the folks at Lighthouse have this and they can disseminate it to their client base as well. Okay. That's part or Division C of this new law. Family medical leave change. Division D of this new law is an Emergency Paid Sick Days Act. Once again, private employers with less than 500 employees. If you happen to be a public agency, it's any public agency with one or more employees. And these paid sick days, employees would be able to use them for a number of different reasons, whereas the family medical leave changes I just described were exclusively for an employee who has to stay home to care for a child with school or childcare closure. These paid sick days, the employee is able to use them if they themselves get COVID-19, if they are subject to quarantine, if they don't know and they have symptoms and they're seeking medical care, if they're caring for an individual that might either be under quarantine or subject to the disease, as well as they can use it for caring for a child who is not going to school or childcare right now. Once again, there would be an exemption for employees that are healthcare providers or emergency responders. The amount of time that the House has approved would be 80 hours of additional paid sick leave for full-time employees and a proportionate prorated share of that for part-time employees. Once this pandemic passes and the need for this leave goes away, these extra paid sick days go away. Okay, so this is not going to be something that's going to be ongoing. In fact, both of these provisions of the law that I'm talking about are due to sunset December 31st this year. The additional paid sick days, the bill made it clear that if the employer has existing policies of paid sick time, PTO, vacation, that this needs to be in addition to, and you could not require your people to exhaust their already existing time off before getting this new paid time off. Once again, and again, there's a lot more details available that I'm not going to go into because it may well change between today and tomorrow, but once again, these emergency paid sick days that you would be legally required to provide to your employees, you as the employer would get a credit, an offsetting credit on your Social Security and Medicare taxes to reimburse you for providing them. So we're urging people to get ready. This is happening very, very soon. Yesterday in his press conference, the president pretty much alluded to the fact that he thought that the Senate would possibly expand these and make them a little broader. So we're kind of waiting with bated breath. But where I usually don't like to give people too much details about new laws until they're signed, but because we get into a frenzy about something that might not happen, this is going to happen in some fashion. And I think the knowledge of this being there as a resource, I think we need to look at it as a resource in addition to the existing social programs that we have in place. I think it's really important to employers that are last night, today, tonight, and tomorrow looking to make very, very challenging decisions. Okay, that's the legal update. I'm going to, as a corollary, remind everybody right now to remember that regardless of the new law, that if they do have people that do go on a leave of absence, I know we're all in a bit of a panic right now, but we have certain protocols that we need to follow. And if the leave is going to qualify as a family medical leave, for example, or a similar leave under state law, there are I'm going to say onerous because they are. There's detailed and onerous notifications that need to be given to employees, postings that have to happen, policies that have to be in handbooks. Just let's not get sloppy about all that stuff and remember that we've got to kind of keep our house in order with giving people appropriate notification of their rights under these different leave laws. The two new laws that I talked about are the one new law with the two parts. There's apparently going to be some posters that have to get posted in the workplace and disseminated to employees, and so we're going to be learning about that as this all rolls out. So reminder to keep on top of FMLA and other mandated leave requirements with regards to notifications. Again, as a corollary to that, it brings up a lot of issues about ADA, and I have read and talked to so many different people about ADA issues in light of there being a pandemic, and we typically want to be very, very concerned about employees' privacy rights and engaging into interactive process with employees when, say, they have work limitations, need time off. How do we not run afoul of some of these requirements that are in place to keep employees' health information private? And we're in very uncertain times right now. I'm going to bring up on the topic of ADA a question that's been posed to our office many, many times in the past few days that maybe some of you have grappled with. And we've heard that one of the ways of determining if somebody is symptomatic of COVID-19 disease would be that they're running a fever. My staff started trying to amend clients' handbooks and give guidance about what constitutes a fever, and I thought, whoa, let's reel back from that, because as HR people, maybe we shouldn't be giving advice about what's a fever or not. We do understand that the CDC says that a fever is over 100.4, but we have had many companies decide to implement or at least think about implementing a policy where they were taking people's temperatures before allowing them to enter the workplace. The EEOC has actually given us some guidance on that, and in ordinary circumstances, taking somebody's temperature would be considered a medical procedure. And because it's a medical procedure, we are typically precluded from doing that with current employees unless there is a business necessity or an imminent threat. So when our first clients called us up 2 weeks ago in Orange County and we had not yet had any reported cases of the coronavirus in Orange County, that they were requiring every single employee to have his or her temperature taken before being allowed on the into the workplace, we felt probably didn't meet the direct threat requirement. I can't answer that question anymore, and I don't know that there is a black and white answer to it. I think that every company has to look at their operations. They have to look at the area that they are in. They have to make a determination as to what the threat may be, what the risk may be, and keeping in mind that taking somebody's temperature isn't necessarily 100% definitive, because we understand that people can still be carriers, they can still have the disease and be asymptomatic or at least not have a fever. So not 100% good answer for you on that, but I wanted to give you some of the criteria that you need to be taking into consideration before going ahead and just, you know, blindly launching into establishing that type of policy. All right. The other thing that I wanted to urge people to look at is some reminders about their paid time off policies. So if you currently have vacation and sick policies in place, it's a good idea right now to remind people of what those are, what the requirements are for notification. Are you going to bend the rules in these circumstances? You know, there are some people that don't allow people to use their vacation if it's sick, and don't allow to use their sick if it's unless they're physically sick themselves. Do you have employees with children that are needing child care because their school is closed right now, and as of right now we don't have other options? Would you allow an employee at the current time to use their sick time for that purpose when it might ordinarily not be allowed? Pull out your handbooks, pull out those policies, and decide if you need to just remind people of what they are or if you need to maybe make some temporary modifications to those policies. The issue of time off does impact sometimes people's exempt and non-exempt status, and that's a question we're getting posed to us a lot these days as well. So when you have an exempt employee who, in other words, they're exempt from needing to be paid overtime, there's multiple criteria that have to be met for that person to remain exempt. And typically those employees need to be paid on a salaried basis, and you can't adjust their pay based on quantity and quality of work. Now, under federal guidelines, there are some carve-outs for that. So if you have a sick leave policy in place, for example, which most companies do, and the employee has either not yet earned enough sick time or has exhausted their sick time, and the employee takes full day off from work, even if they're a salaried exempt person, and you want to deduct the equivalent of that one day of wages from their salary at next payroll, you are permitted to do that under federal and state law. Okay. If the employee takes time off for personal reasons, as long as it is done in full day increments, you are permitted to do so. Okay, you're permitted to adjust their pay. The question comes up of if we say we're closing the company on Thursday and Friday, or we're going to close on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from now on, can you actually reduce an employee's pay because you're saying that there is less work? That is going to be very dependent upon your state law, and it could be problematic. So if you wanted to make a temporary adjustment to a salaried person's pay because you are the ones directing them to do less work, not they are taking time off because they're sick, not because they are making the decision for personal reasons, but the company is imposing less work hours, you could potentially find yourselves in a situation where that commensurate reduction in their salary could violate their exempt status. Now, California is a state that usually is more strict than others. And for those of you that are here, I'll remind you that back in 2009, when we went through the Great Recession, many companies were looking at ways to stay in business, and so they were contemplating these issues of reductions in work hours and reductions in pay. And the Labor Commissioner in California issued an opinion letter back then that said, as long as it is being done for viable business reasons, such as an emergency, and as long as it is being done for what is hoped to be a short duration of time, and they didn't really define short for us, we're going to allow you to take a salaried person who you now is going to say is only going to work 4 days a week and give them a 20% cut in their salary, as long as it's with the expectation that this is going to be for a short duration and that they would be restored to a full work week and their full salary at a later date. So that we can, it's still law in California. We can feel very comfortable making that decision in California. If you are in another state of operation, that would be a decision that I would suggest you get guidance from, whether it be from, you know, doing the research yourself and contacting your state labor commissioner, seeing if there are any similar opinion letters to California's in your state, reaching out to a firm like ours that would be happy to help you look that up, or a great resource these days would be your employment attorney. But that would be something I just urge you to be very, very careful about before just willy-nilly implementing, because you don't accidentally want to have turned these salaried people into non-exempt and all of a sudden be having to track their work hours and provide them with meal and rest periods if you need to, and overtime, which could offset the savings that you tried to realize by cutting pay in the first place. Okay, Dana, how are we doing on questions and time?
We are doing great, and as far as no questions so far. What we are going to do is towards the we're at 10:31, so we have 15 minutes. We're going to open up the line so you can talk directly to Lorraine at the end of our
program. Oh, that's
going to
be great. That's going to be great. Okie doke. Oops, I'm clicking on my screen. So the last topic that I want to talk about is telecommuting, because, you know, it feels like three quarters of the country is telecommuting right now, which is fabulous. And, you know, we have to feel a little bit lucky that this is happening at a time where most of us have had a good portion of the technology already in place to allow this. So it's a blessing. And some of us are having to scramble that maybe some of our employees were already set up to telecommute, but not all of them. But luckily the technology exists there, and there's so many different applications to help people either remote into computers at the office or work completely remotely. It's we've got the resources. Call your IT folks, get them to help you if you're not set up, but it's a great solution for right now, even if we're not under a mandatory order in the location that you happen to be to have people telecommute. It's really something that as good citizens we can do that's going to help with interpersonal contact and slow the evolution of this disease and this virus down. So I'm going to walk through, and if anyone's interested, I've got kind of a nice like couple-page info bulletin that walks through some of the issues to think about when you're setting up a telecommuting program. And I would urge you that if you're having folks telecommute, that you do set up some, I would say, written guidelines about it before you launch people to go off and do it, because there can be a lot of gray areas and question marks. One of the biggest concerns that I'll start out with that I've heard is companies reluctant to let people telecommute because they're afraid then the people will never want to come back and work in the offices again. And the employees may say, well, hey, if I could do it during the pandemic, why can't I keep doing it? And they might have a point there. So I think you need to think long and hard about whether you would want to allow this to morph into a more ongoing situation, or and whether that would work for your business or whether it would be detrimental for your business. To the extent that you do not want to commit that this is going to be forever hereafter the option for employees to make this decision, I would put something in place really, really carefully worded that says, look, we're doing this as an emergency measure, and we're going to reassess. And I would even probably put a timeline on it. People are saying through the end of March right now. Some people are pushing things through the end of April, letting people know that it will cause some level of disruption to business, because at the end of the day, many of us do still have to get together. But telling people that it's only for a certain duration and then it will be reassessed. So you don't set that expectation up of employees that they are going to be able to telecommute forever hereafter.
That's a good point, Lorraine, that you brought up. And also, we have an article that we sent out a couple weeks ago on working from home telecommuting.
Okay.
So if anyone would like a copy of that, just email us and we'll get that to you if you didn't get to see that. Thanks, Lorraine, for bringing that up.
You're very welcome. And, you know, so some of what I'm saying here may be duplicative with what's in Dana's article, and for that I apologize. I will read your article if you send it to me this afternoon. Thank you. One of the things that you should think about is it your entire workforce that you can send home to telecommute, or are there certain functions that really cannot be conducted from home? I mean, I'm going to state the obvious here, but we have this conversation at our office that to keep in business, someone's got to be getting our mail and getting our checks deposited from our clients in our bank account so we can pay our employees. So that's a function you can't telecommute with. So thinking through what factions and portions of your workforce could be sent home to telecommute would be the first thing to do. Is it going to be 100% telecommuting, or possibly are you going to have people telecommute a certain portion of the week with some residual duties still in your offices, where you're going to try to maintain maybe less folks so we can do the social distancing thing? I do have to stop and tell you a very funny story, and if you guys get online and Google this, you'll find it. But I'm Italian, and I travel to Italy a lot, in France as well, and I have a lot of friends in Italy that I've been keeping in contact with because, you know, they've been in way worse circumstances than us for a very long time. And our friend Cosimo in Rome was out over the weekend at the market, and he runs into this guy who has taken what looks like a tabletop, but now from having seen the picture of the guy online, it seems like it might have been cardboard. Big circular-looking tabletop thing that he cut a circle in the center and put straps over it and put it over himself as though it were a buoy, and he was out doing his shopping in the market with this big donut around him to prevent him and others from getting within 6 feet of one another. It's hysterical. You have to go look the picture up. It's very, very funny. So I don't know if the guy was seriously trying to keep the germs away from him or if he was trying to get on the internet, which he succeeded in doing. So we're being encouraged, even when we're in the office, to maintain that 6 foot distance. I read something the other day that was really smart that said move every other chair in the office, like off into a conference room, just so that we're not tempted to go sit in a chair that's too close to a coworker. So again, in our telecommuting, likewise, be thinking about if there still is a faction of your staff that's going to be coming into the office, how can we keep more distance between us at the office? Wage and hour issues to think about when people are telecommuting. How, if you've got a non-exempt employee that's an hourly employee that you need to pay by the hour, and be careful about rest breaks and meal periods in states where that is a requirement or if it is your company policy. How are you going to ensure what people's work hours and working time are? Do you have an electronic timekeeping system that once they're working from home, they're still able to utilize? Will you need to come up with some kind of way to monitor when they log on and off their computer? Will you simply ask them to keep track on a piece of paper and Excel spreadsheet of their hours worked? But come up with something and let them know so the expectations are set, so people can be doing it in real time and not having to go 2 weeks from now, oh, shoot, I don't remember how many hours I worked last Monday. So alternative work week schedules. I just want to caveat you that if you are either in California or one of the four other states in this country, who I can never remember exactly, but it's Nevada, Colorado, and I can't remember, but I could look it up if you need me to, where we have daily overtime, alternative work weeks. For example, somebody wants to work 4 tens instead of 5 eights. And you don't want to pay them overtime, that daily overtime for the days that they work 10, there is a very specific procedures that need to be followed that are prescribed by state labor commissioners about when that is permissible. You can't just go off and do that on your own. So be careful, because when you send people to work from home, there might be more of a tendency, because nobody's opening and shutting the door in the morning. They're going to start working when they get up, and they're going to finish when they want to. You need to be careful about people morphing into a situation where you might be liable for daily overtime. Okay, so get some guidance on that if you need it. Travel. If somebody is going to be working from home and has no regular workplace, they're not coming to and from the office, what happens the day that you start sending that person, if this is still permissible, to go to a client's work site? How are you going to figure out what is compensable time, what mileage you would have to pay the person? This is very much going to be something that you're going to have to look at on a case-by-case basis, but it's, again, something to think about now and get clarity about, so that you and your employees are not wrestling with these things after the fact. Exempt employees, if they're off, you do have an issue of how to monitor. Let's say an employee says, I'm going to take this week of vacation off. And so technically you don't really need to be paying the person, but what if that exempt employee is on a daily basis doing a de minimis amount of checking email and, you know, checking voice messages and returning phone calls? Technically, under the law, when an exempt employee performs any work during the work week, you owe the person their full salary for that week. So you could run into muddy waters with your exempt folks if they're supposed to be at home, not working. So again, getting clarity with them about that will be important. You need to think through that if folks are at home and they're either caring for children or elderly parents or even people that are just other people that might be sick, what is efficiency going to look like at home? How are you going to make sure that folks are really getting their full 40 hours a week, if that's what you need them to be doing, when they are working from home, when there really might well be some pretty serious distractions? And then workers' comp is just a consideration as well. It's probably, if you're going to have folks working from home, my two cents is it's probably worth a phone call to your work comp carrier or the broker right now and see if they require you to do anything special. Do they need you to give you those employees' addresses so that they can list them as an alternative location? I can't answer that for you. That would be very much on a case-by-case basis with your insurance carrier. But, you know, God forbid somebody does have an injury that is work-related when they are working from home. You want to make sure that you and your employees are both covered. So I think, Dana, that leaves us about 4 minutes for questions. So I'm wrapping up there.
That is,
and hope
absolutely
that does give us
perfect
sufficient time for people to chat.
You did a great job, Lorraine. We're going to open up the line in just a minute, but just two things. First thing is, on March 31st, we have another special edition open line, and it's entitled Staying Focused on the Right Things During a Pandemic. And Paul David Walker will be our guest
nice.
For that day. So yeah, mark that down. We'll send an invite out for March 31st. Now, we have... Second thing is, we have quite a number of people on the call today because of the importance of this topic, and of course, everyone wants to hear Lorraine share. So, to make this work, I'm going to ask all of you to put your phones on mute. Please do not put your phone on hold, otherwise we'll all be listening to Muzak. So you put your phone
yes.
on mute, and I'm going to then unmute everybody, and then you can ask questions to Lorraine. Let's just remember, do not put your phone on hold, just put it on mute. No matter how many times I say that, somebody still does that. Okay.
We'll hear the lovely music.
Let's open up the line right now, and if you have any questions for Lorraine, you can ask away. All righty, the line's unmuted. Lorraine is here. Any questions you'd like to ask?
Hi, Lorraine.
Hello.
I just have a quick question on the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. Is that 50 employees or under? Are we exempt?
Hold on just a second. Let me get my cheat sheet notes up here. The bill that went to the Senate on the Emergency Paid Sick Leave did not provide for a hardship exemption for companies under 50. The portion of it that required the extension of FMLA leave did have that provision in it. That is one of the big things that we don't know if that will get changed by the Senate today.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
You're next. Welcome. Really, really, really good question.
Thank you. Next question.
Hey, Lorraine. Mark Arenal here.
Hi, Mark. Nice to talk to you under bad circumstances.
Yes, unfortunately. The notice that was put out by the county health officer yesterday for the County of Orange caused a lot of confusion. Can you clarify what the latest,
Yes, I will. Thank you, Mark. This is for those of you, those of us that are in Orange County, California. I'm not speaking about any other location right now. I just want to make that super clear. We got a directive issued in a press release from the Orange County, I guess it's the Orange County Emergency Health Services Department. I'm probably getting their name wrong. But it was a message that looked very, very much like a lockdown order. And it said that there were to be no public or private gatherings of more than one person. And they listed a whole bunch of exceptions, which were emergency, basically essential services, you know, hardware stores and grocery stores and banks, et cetera, that could remain open. Everybody, every literate person that I know that speaks English read that order and felt we were under lockdown, and we had businesses shut down last night and not have their employees come in today. 7 o'clock last night, the County of Orange issued an emergency update to that saying, hey, you guys didn't read the thing carefully enough. We think it's important that businesses stay open. We're just encouraging social distancing. So unfortunately, the order that went out yesterday was extremely poorly written. What I am confident that they did is that they've looked at the shutdown orders from Northern California that said all businesses must close with the exception of these emergency or essential activities, and the folks in Orange County got us all confused. So they have officially said as of last night at 7 o'clock that businesses are to remain open with the exception of bars and restaurants and nightclubs, et cetera, that are delineated. And they have told us that they will be issuing some correctional guidelines to it today. I looked before we got on this webinar. I hadn't seen anything yet. I'm hoping they really do it today. But as of 7 o'clock last night, they said, oops, you guys misunderstood. Businesses are to stay open.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Lorraine?
Yes.
This is Irma Holland. Hey,
hello.
So I've got a question related to pregnancy leave. It's a two-part question.
Yes.
Part one is, can you combine pregnancy leave with FMLA and CFRA?
Okay, pregnancy leave does run concurrent with FMLA. It does not run concurrent with CFRA.
Okay. Understood.
So
if somebody returns and wants to take CFRA, then that's something that we have to offer.
Absolutely. So somebody could ostensibly take 12 to 16 weeks in California. This is a California-specific question, everybody. They could take up to 16 weeks of pregnancy leave under PDL that would also be covered under FMLA, and then they could take an additional 12 weeks under CFRA or CFRA for baby bonding.
Beautiful. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And that's all within 12 months of the start
that's,
of that leave.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
All righty. Any other questions?
I have one. This is Maureen. My question is around the new emergency paid sick leave that will be implemented soon. I understand that leave is geared more towards the, as you said, like if an employee were sick themselves, if they were caring for a sick family member, and then that whole child care provision. Is there a way as an HR professional that we can validate that in order to activate that leave, whether it's asking for doctor's notes or proof of loss of child care, like what can we do to help manage that?
I don't want to answer that with too much detail right now because that's part of the nitty-gritty in the bill that I think may change, but they do have language in there currently that talks about the employer's ability to get notices from their employees regarding this. The very first version of the bill that the Senate, that the House passed had a timeline of like you couldn't expect them to give you notice until 3 weeks after the fact, and that the current version doesn't have that in that. So I think we're probably going to have some direction about it. I just don't know what it's going to be. The current bill says that the employer can require reasonable notice procedures, and that's all it currently tells us.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, when the thing finally gets signed, we will have the nitty-gritty detail.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I do have one question. My name is Crystal. And this might be similar to the exact same question that we just heard from, but what if we have a situation where we have an employee who does telecommute, that's just a part of their normal job function, and they're telling us that they believe that their mother-in-law, who takes care of their child, might have the virus, but we don't know for sure, and she has been in close proximity with the mother-in-law, and is unsure if she has been exposed as well. What kind of similar to what the person just asked, is there anything that we can do to, there's nothing we can do to validate that, right? And if they're deciding to self-quarantine, do you know what we can do?
The exact language in the current version, again, unpassed as of right this moment, of the paid sick days change says that the provisions under which the employee could use this new paid sick time is if they are subject to a mandatory quarantine, if they have been advised to self-quarantine, or if they're experiencing symptoms and seeking medical care. How we go about getting notification from people to determine that that's really true or not is still very fuzzy to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would advise you to self-quarantine? I'm not even really sure. People are getting teleconferences with their doctor, and are they going to, you know, ask their doctor for a text message to pass along that where the doctor is advising that they self-quarantine? I think there's going to have to be a lot of just discretion that we're going to have to use as HR professionals and business owners with regards to this. And unfortunately, as always happens, they're going to be the people that are going to take advantage, right? They're going to be the people that are going to want to get their 80 hours of paid sick time when maybe everybody in their household is completely healthy. And we may end up in a situation where there isn't a boatload we can do about that. But
okay.
I think we first have to wait and see what the law permits us to do and then decide how we come up with an internal policy or procedure after that. It's a tough, tough question.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Sorry, I don't have a more clear-cut answer.
I do. Hi, my name is Lakeisha. So to that same question, we have under 50 employees. Are they still allowed the 80 hours, or do we just not get that credit?
Yet.
As of right now, the version of the bill that the Senate is considering does not provide for a hardship exemption for that 80 hours of special new paid sick leave. It's possible that the Senate will put that in there. I think it's unlikely, is my opinion. Even the under 50 exemption for the extra FMLA type of leave, we don't yet know it's not automatic. You would have to petition and prove that it would jeopardize the viability of the business. We don't yet know what the mechanism would be for, you know, opting or trying to request that exemption.
Okay.
And again, keep in mind that this still isn't signed, and once it does signed, as of the way the bill is crafted right now, it goes into effect 15 days after signature. It's possible that the Senate could make a change to that and they could deem it what they call emergency legislation. They could make it effective immediately. But I think there's a recognition on the part of our legislators that it may take some time for us to all get ready to do this. So the plan as of right now is to give us 2 weeks from the date of signature to get our acts in gear.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to share, and I know we're way over time here, but I'm going to share that one of my clients who is does provide services to the elderly had an employee email her 2 nights ago and said, new law, got passed on Friday, I'm not coming to work for 14 days, you got to pay me. And my client was like in a complete meltdown. And so, you know, expect that. People are reading stuff all over the news. Some of the news articles have really good information about this, and some of them don't have really good information about it. So expect that your employees are probably going to be confused and asking questions too. So at least you now know what the current status is. You can share with the employees that this is what we think is going to happen. It hasn't yet happened. It's not yet signed. And as soon as it is signed, we'll let people know.
Awesome.
Great. Any other questions?
Question regarding layoffs. How would you advise, given the situation, that we kind of decide who would be on that list?
That's a great question. It may be where maybe the genesis of this entire webinar today. I know that when you're trying to do layoffs, there's so many different ways at looking at the situation. Some companies have formal policies about layoffs that dictate who gets laid off first. That is more of a union type of scenario. If you happen to be, I was assuming nobody on the call was a union employer, but that could be erroneous. If you're a union employer, you probably have very strict protocols about how layoffs have to happen. If you are an employer with a written committed to policy about how you conduct layoffs, you need to make sure you follow that. If you are not, there is a tendency for people to feel like it's more fair to lay off people that were more recently hired. I would urge you to look at your operations and recognize that given the state that we are in right now, all companies may take some level of financial hit. We all may have to skinny down our operations, and I would look at essential versus non-essential services. It would be really, really easy to say get rid of your poor performers right now and keep all your strong people, but if your poor performers are the only person that's not telecommuting, that's going to get the mail every day and getting the checks deposited at the bank, and without that you'll shut down, you might have to look at things from a different optic than you normally would. So
great,
I would look
you.
At critical functions.
Critical functions. Is there anything that you can refer us to, maybe a guideline or a step-by-step on how to process this?
Layoffs?
Yes.
Yeah, let me pull something for you. I've got something that's a good compliance document about things to think about before doing a termination or a layoff. And I'll see if I can't pull together one or two other resources as well and get them to Dana, who can get them out to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Perfect.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Any other questions?
This is Cody. I have one more question. So say someone goes home sick. Hello. Say someone goes home sick. They get tested. They're positive with the virus. What's the protocol on them coming back to work or on that?
They would need an all clear from their doctor. The CDC has some really good guidelines out there about that. So if somebody does test positive before you would permit them to come back to the workplace, you are absolutely going to need a certification from a doctor that they are cleared.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. It brings up the question, though, if one person in the workplace tests positive, what do you do then and who has to self-quarantine? And as of right now, the guidelines are that anyone that has that's either experiencing symptoms should self-quarantine, or if a person has come into direct contact with someone who has tested positive, they should self-quarantine.
For 14 days?
So if you have somebody in your workplace that does test positive, any coworkers that have come in contact with that person should self-quarantine, and I think as the employer you could, that's the wrong term, but ban them from the workplace.
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
You're welcome.
One more question. This is great. We appreciate everybody attending today. Let's see, two things. One, again, I wanted to remind you that on March 31st, we're doing another special edition program, staying focused on the right things during a pandemic. Second thing is we'll be sending out the audio for today to everybody, along with Lorraine's contact information. So if you have additional questions or thoughts, you can reach out to Lorraine. She's very, very available to very busy, but very available. We'll help you guys along.
Very busy, but sitting at my desk busy. Thank you, everybody. Yeah,
in the meantime,
great,
Lorraine, why don't you give your phone number out?
Sure. I'm going to give you my office in Southern California. That number is 949-248-0800.
Why don't you repeat
that
one more time?
I'm
going to
give you my 949-248-0800. I'll give you our 800 number, which is 877-847-7359. Again, 877-847-7359. Our phones are set up such that there is always a consultant on call, so even if you call weekends outside of normal business hours, the voicemail will prompt you to hit, I don't know, I think it might be press 2 for consultants on call. It'll get routed to one of us, one of our cell phone numbers, and we really do take calls absolutely anytime. We understand that we're in scary times right now, and if you need to talk and it's late at night, we're here.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for participating today. I know your times are all valuable. These are tough times. We'll get through it together. Lorraine, thank you for carving out time of your busy schedule. That was just terrific, and I look forward to having you guys join us again for our next program. So thank you, and have a great rest of the day, and everyone be safe.
Awesome.
Go look up the guy in Italy, the funny picture, and it'll make you laugh today. All right. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Lori, what can we look up for the picture?